This is Living Lab. I'm Heather Goldstone. Captain Robert Scott's 1911 trek to the South Pole was remarkable in a number of ways. But what's remembered by most is that he and his team were beaten to the pole and then died on the return journey. Last fall, a two-man team known as the Scott Expedition set out to write a new ending to that story. In November, we spoke with their science coordinator, Anthony Goddard, and we promised to let you know how things worked out. Well, after 4 months of pulling sleds across Arctic snow and ice, Ben Saunders and Tarka Lepinière have returned to civilization. Their goal was to make the trek without any outside support. In the end, they had to request one resupply drop, but they returned safe and sound just about 3 weeks ago, and I caught up with expedition leader Ben Saunders shortly thereafter. Give me a sense of what you've actually been doing since you completed the expedition. Where do you actually mark the end? Is it when you reached your return point or when you get back to London? When do you call the end of the expedition?
Wow, I'm actually wondering the same thing myself at the moment. We actually stopped skiing, I guess, 12 days ago now, roughly. Even the exact finish time is really confusing because we swapped time zones. So we finished at Scott Base, which is a New Zealand, it's run by Antarctica New Zealand. And we were, before we got there, operating on UK time on UTC, and they operate 12-hour difference. So it was the 6th or 7th of February, depending on which time zone you look at it. So, 12, 13, less than 2 weeks ago, we actually stopped skiing. We got back to the UK on Tuesday of this week, and my feet have hardly touched the ground since then. It's been very, very busy. So I'd been, I think in my mind for 105 days skiing along, I'd been dreaming of, getting back to my apartment, putting my feet up on the sofa, seeing my dog, watching a movie, just relaxing. And I haven't had the chance to do that yet. So right now, that seems like the finish line. It feels like I'm not there yet.
So what have you been doing for that intervening 2 weeks? I mean, you guys had grueling doesn't quite cover what
you
went through.
It was a long journey home. The logistics were quite complex. We had to fly from McMurdo, which is kind of on the New Zealand side of Antarctica. We had to fly across Antarctica to a base called Union Glacier, which is on the Chilean side. We flew from there to Chile. We had about 4 days in Punta Arenas, which is in the southernmost tip of Chile. We flew from there to Santiago, and then Santiago to Madrid in Spain, and then Spain to London on Tuesday. So it's been a heck of a journey coming home. I think about 30 hours in various airplanes, ranging from giant airliners to little ski planes with propellers. So it's been a long journey home.
And how are you feeling just even physically? I mean, you guys lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, it's interesting. I when I came back on Tuesday, I got on my scales in my apartment that evening when I was here briefly before dashing out again for another TV thing. And to my amazement, I lost 20 kilos, so 44 pounds. I put on 10 pounds before the expedition. So I finished it at Scott Base kind of 22 pounds below my normal healthy weight. And I put almost all of that back on in the space of 12 days. So which probably isn't very healthy, gaining 12 pounds and gaining 20 odd pounds in 12 days. But it's been a pretty unusual challenge, physiologically from every point of view.
So are you feeling back up to strength at this point?
Nowhere near. What's really weird is that I now look normal. I don't look, skinny and drawn and gaunt anymore. I look normal. My clothes fit like they used to, but I have it's very odd, like no strength, no kind of spring, no power. I could walk all day, which is basically what we're doing, but trying to run up my stairs, I can't do it. It's really, really strange. So I've got this kind of deep fatigue and this kind of very odd just feeling of weakness, like physical weakness. So I think our bodies are pretty worn out, and I think it's going to take a while to get back to strength again. So, and the challenge I have at the moment is that my diary is just rammed with interviews and sponsor commitments and travel and, Things are really insane right now. I always knew that was going to be the case, but life isn't really much less challenging than it was 3 weeks ago.
Just a different set of challenges now.
Yeah, exactly. And it's quite amusing. You know, there were so many days in Antarctica where Tarka and I would just swear that nothing would ever make us want to go back there. Nothing would ever make us want to go back to that existence. And now already I'm like, you know what? Life was pretty simple down there. I've got back and for some reason at my apartment and at my office, the internet is not working at either. I had to sort of call the phone company, and they want to know my username and my number and account number. I have no idea what these things are. I need to go online to find them, but I can't go online. And it's just, life is so complex. You know, I just want to get back to living in a tent and eating my sort of one day's ration pack that is in a bag. I don't have to think about finding food or paying bills or anything. So life feels very complex here in London.
A bit of culture shock going on. Do you have a plan for beyond this initial, hopefully just temporary crush of commitments?
I have kind of tending to the
physiological and the psychological recovery?
Yeah, the next couple of weeks are pretty crazy, actually. I'm next week's fairly busy, and I'm in Geneva with a sponsor the beginning of March, and then I have about a week, 10 days in March, just blocked out of my diary to recover, and then I'm going to Vancouver to speak at TED. So that's going to be an amazing period, although TED I think will be quite nerve-wracking before my talk anyway. So in 2 weeks' time it gets quieter, but the trick at the moment is just surviving this the next fortnight, next 10 or 12 days. I haven't even unpacked any of my bags. It's just, I'm surrounded by chaos.
Wow. Did the expedition in the end live up to your expectations? It clearly didn't go exactly as hoped, but...
It didn't go exactly as planned. A friend of mine said that the first casualty of war is always the plan. I think the trick with the polar regions is appreciating that there are so many variables that will always be outside your control. They're quite humbling environments, and they are places where you are genuinely and totally at the mercy of the elements, and the elements can be quite intimidating and quite threatening in those places. So Antarctica is a vast place. It's nearly twice the size of Australia if you include the coastal ice shelves, same size as China and India put together. So it's a really big place, and it's, of course, the coldest, the windiest, the highest, the driest continent on Earth. So it's got all these extremes. And, going down there as we did with a plan that is doesn't have much leeway in it. I think one of the reasons this trip hadn't been done, this expedition hadn't been completed, is that it's at the very, even now, even with 21st century equipment and nutrition, and clothing and technology, it is still at the very outer margins of what's possible, certainly physiologically. So there was never really much leeway, for things like rest days or for bad weather. And with things, we realized we'd just cut the margins slightly too fine on the plateau. I hadn't anticipated how debilitating the high plateau was going to be, and we spent about a month up there at altitude, above 10,000 feet, or around 10,000 feet. I mean, it's we spent 4 weeks above 2,800 meters, and that's not super high, but it's high enough to be debilitating, and it's also colder up there. It's windier. We had a headwind for the first 2.5 weeks, At altitudes, your digestion suffers. You don't sleep as well. Obviously, it takes a while to acclimatize. So that was a really challenging part of the journey, and we were definitely weakened more than we expected by those conditions. So it was harder than I expected, to answer your question. I've led a lot of big expeditions before. I skied solo to the geographic North Pole from Russia. So So I'm no stranger to, you know, to suffering in a sledge harness, but this trip was something else. I think just the sheer scale of it and the duration of it was it still defies description, really. 105 days, 1,800 miles. It was just mammoth. So in some ways, you know, I guess I wanted a challenge, and I got that. You know, I wanted to, to experience Antarctica in a similar way to people like Scott and Shackleton and Amundsen, you know, a century ago, and we certainly got some insight into that. And I wanted to, you know, share the story of this journey in a way that engaged other people. So I hope we do that as well. So in some ways, yes, I got everything I wanted to out of it, but it certainly didn't go according to plan.
Do you have any regrets?
No regrets at all. We you know, Tarka and I talked a lot about, you know, what we do, what could we have done differently? Could we have avoided having the resupply of food in the pole? But the margins are were always so fine. I don't regret anything we did. You know, we came back safely and you know, relatively healthy and in one piece, and we completed the journey. So all of the principal goals, we achieved. It would have been nice to do it without any support at all, but that was way down the list. You know, getting home in one piece was the chief goal. In some ways, you know, Captain Scott's death is still seen by many as a pretty courageous death. But I think if we'd died down there, it just would have been stupid. You know, I mean, that was never part of the plan. So for us, the main aim was getting back in one piece. You know, and getting back, you know, healthy and well, and then and finishing the journey, which we did.
You know, after we spoke with Anthony. We got some emails, some of them, people completely enthralled with the mission, and others really quite strongly saying this is foolhardy, this is reckless, there's no real reason to be doing this. What do you say to naysayers like that?
I've had years and years and years of that sort of stuff. I mean, I've had, just emails from complete strangers. Packed with abuse almost, and people saying I should get a proper job, and I'm just, you know, it's just egotistical, you know, selfish, pointless, you know. Reinhold Messner, who was, you know, the mountaineer, he described his climbing career as useless but meaningful, and I kind of buy into that. I think there's something in that. I see myself more as an athlete than an explorer in the Edwardian sense of the word. We weren't, we weren't trying to find out where the South Pole is. We weren't naming mountains. You know, that's been done, really. So for me, it was a journey. You know, the exploration was really trying to see if we could finish this journey, if we could walk further than anyone had walked before in those conditions, which is what we did. So we achieved that. So I feel that we've genuinely raised the bar in the field that I'm passionate about. We shared the stories to the best of our ability. It's clear that some people found some inspiration in what we're doing. So I'm happy with that. There will always be people that will view it as, you know, reckless or pointless or, you know, whatever it is. So that's just, you can't please everyone.
Captain Scott, of course, has had his fair share of naysayers over the years, people who say that his missions were ill-planned or ill-guided, and that the deaths could have been avoided. You know, some say his death's heroic, as you mentioned. Others say pointless. Do you feel like completing this mission recasts the original Scott expedition in a different light?
It's interesting. You know, when I first realized that this, you know, years and years ago, that this journey hadn't been finished yet, I also thought that I didn't want it to become a sort of backward-looking, you know, reenactment or something that was trying to set the record straight. And it was purely the fact that this journey still remained unfinished that intrigued me. You know, from a sheer human endeavor standpoint, how come, given everything we've learned, we understand scurvy now. We've invented great things like solar panels and Velcro and, you know, breathable synthetic fabrics and fantastic, you know, carbon fiber skis and sledges and we know how to freeze dry food, all these advances. Like, how come this journey still hasn't been done yet? So that was the challenge that intrigued me. However, the more I've read about Scott and the more I've learned about Scott, you know, Scott's grandson is one of our patrons for the expedition. I've read I don't know how many biographies there are. I've read 19 biographies of Scott now, and people are still arguing over it. So I wanted to avoid that debate, but I've actually become more and more, just certainly through the expedition, through what we experienced, a defender of Scott in many ways. And I've certainly come away from this trip with some insight into what they must have gone through, and with a sense of absolute awe at what they endured. They were barely more than 100 miles away from finishing it, so they very nearly did it. To me, the fact that they set the bar so high that it's taken more than a century for someone to finish it, as we did 12 days ago, is evidence enough that that they weren't amateurs. They pulled off something really, really remarkable.
That was Scott expedition leader Ben Saunders. Ben told me he plans to write a book about his expedition this summer. We'll let you know if and when that happens. For now, though, that's our show. This is Living Lab. You can find Living Lab Radio all week on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Amy Vins produces The Point, with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.